Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today is serial and super serial, to be honest with you, entrepreneur Lex Deek, founder of, amongst other things, Q Ventures, a venture capital firm, and most recently, co-founder and CEO of Basket, the e-commerce startup aiming to revolutionize the online shopping experience, and boy, does it need it. Fascinated by business and inspired by his mum's women's only taxi company, which she grew to £1 million of turnover, Lex spent his university student loan buying two properties, cheeky, doubling his money in 3 years and using that to launch a company importing gilt frame mirrors and furniture from China and selling them through auction houses. It's going to get crazier. Just bear with me. Having launched, grown, then exited the UK's first eBay drop-off shop, a long weekend in Morocco to clear his head, as he said, turned into a year-long business trip. Of course it did, with Lex building a boutique hotel in Marrakesh, as you do. He successfully pitched on Dragon's Den. He's created an investment platform facilitating over £250 million in funding for more than 200 companies. And I've missed plenty out, but we'll get to that later. His most recent venture is Basket, launched in 2021. Acting as a universal wish list for online shopping, Basket brings all your desired products into one place, letting you know of price drops and discounts. And with 250,000 users already in the UK, they're planning international expansion this year. Lex Deek is my business shaper today, and often I say founder of X, but in this case, it's founder of X, Y, Z, A, B, C, D, E, A, F, and G. It's actually Dayak, isn't it?
It is Dayak, Elliot. Yes, it's of Hungarian origin. My dad was a Hungarian man, so I don't impose the proper pronunciation upon people.
And where would the accent be? Which word? Which letter?
It would be on the A. Sort of an acute accent on the A. But I'd spend my life just saying, oh, no, sorry. I'll be Hyacinth Bouquet, basically. I'll be that
Yeah,
guy.
You could be that. That'd be good. Yeah. Well, Hyacinth Bouquet is an honourable person. And when did Dad come to the UK? Because I know your father died many years ago when you were eight or nine.
Yeah,
that's
right, when I was eight. Yeah, he came to the UK. So he was born in 28. It was after the war.
Okay.
As part of a scheme that was running in Wales where they were taking in people to work in the mines.
Okay.
And he did that for a little bit. He was orphaned at a very young age and was on his own. He was only child. Found himself working in Wales in the mines. And then a Hungarian man had started a furniture business in Wales, in the valley. And my dad got to know him through doing a delivery for him. And one delivery took him to London, to the Finchley Road, where there was
a fantastic
apparently back
place.
In the day, there used to be lots of clubs there.
Oh, really?
And this Hungarian guy owned a bunch of nightclubs on the Finchley Road. And my dad got pally with him and ended up running a bunch of his clubs. And that's where he met my mother. He was working there. And the rest, as they say, is history.
And obviously, at a very incredibly young age, I've got kids. I think you've got kids too. Incredibly young age to lose a parent. You're now how old?
42.
You can be as honest or as dishonest as you like. Do you still think about this a lot? Do you think it's defined a lot of what you are about, Lex?
Inevitably, yes. I think I'm thinking about it more recently because my son is around the age that I was. So that's quite poignant, reflecting on just seeing him and thinking, wow, if I disappeared now, that would be devastating. But, when it happens to you, it's your story, right? You don't really know any different. And when you're young enough at that age for it to be massively formative and to have a huge impact, but you've not formed yet. So it becomes part of who you are. And I think it's a bit of a sweeping statement, but when something like that happens to you, you can either become a victim, you can either feel like the world's there against you and kind of crouch down and shrink as a result, or you think, you know what, I'm going to, and this is not a conscious thing actually, but you become, I became man of the house. I'm an only child. It's just me and my mum. And so very independent, very much kind of the man of the home. If there's a problem, I will try and fix it. I will do it. And of course that has informed, it's only a recent realization, but that's informed a big part of who I am today. I feel sad that he didn't get to see his son grow up more than I feel sad that I didn't enjoy his company for longer.
We talked about your dad briefly, and you get a sense of, you know, I'm always intrigued by people that come from another country, as my ancestors did as well, and they just make life work, and it sort of needs must stuff, and you go there but for the grace of God. And absolutely. How did all this happen? Your dad dies, your mum's like, okay, I've got to bring in some money, sets up a business.
Yeah.
I mean, extraordinary, really. Again, this is like early 90s, mm-hmm. and probably hadn't ever set up a taxi business
before. No, she'd been in catering for most of her career, Savoy Hotel through to other types of catering. And I think once she picked herself up off the floor, which is understandable if you're widowed at a young age and, you know, your world just collapses, she picked herself up and incredibly found the strength to, with a neighbour who's, they're basically like family, the kind of the family that lives across the road, two kids that are like brother and sister to me in many ways now. My mum and the neighbour Babs set up a ladies-only cab company. Which was called Lady Fair. It was there was one other, but it was very early, pretty much the first ladies-only taxi company. So only lady drivers, only lady passengers. Based in South Harrow initially, or North Harrow was it, I think?
Near the bowls.
That's right.
I used to go to the bowls as a kid.
Yes.
It was, as my children would say, sketchy. Yes. It's a little sketchy.
It was, yeah.
And not far from the Harrow Leisure Centre, another quite sketchy place where I got hit.
Yeah.
That was my story about how, the only first time and hopefully not the last, but yeah, you nicked my bike, someone said.
The good old days.
And then punched me. It was great. I mean, this is what the 80s were about.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no real threat to life. It was just you may not come back with your trainers or your bike.
You may come back with a black eye.
Yeah.
You're right. It wasn't at that point. You're absolutely right. It wasn't a threat to life. It just wasn't very nice.
Yeah.
So that was the area that they plied their trade.
Yeah, and then they grew that. They had some contracts with the local authorities and did a lot of schools transport. And it was great for me. I mean, it was 24 hours, 7 days a week, which I don't think my mum had fully appreciated at the outset. But that meant I was often taken into the cab office and would sleep there or would spend at least one or two nights a week, it felt like, sleeping over at neighbours' houses or friends' houses. And I had a great time.
I was going to say, what does that do to you? Because on the one hand, that could be very destabilising. On the other hand, it makes you incredibly adaptable and it's fun.
I think it was that. I think it was the latter. I got to spend time with different families, eating different types of food, with different routines, and got comfortable with life just being dynamic and, you know, and free-flowing. And I loved it. I loved it at the time. And I think my mum was, she did her best. Of course, she was there as much as she could be, but she built this business into £1 million turnover business, which provided us with a good quality of life and some nice holidays, and never felt like we wanted for anything. Like, we weren't mega well off, but we were comfortable and we had everything we needed. And I'm eternally grateful to her for that.
And do you think that has that sense of, as you said, the dynamic nature of life and the change and the fun? Is that the thing you search for, do you think? Is that the buzz? Is that what's underpinned so many different ventures? Because again, I meet lots of people and there's often two or three stories, but they're sequential.
Yeah.
And they're often in the same area. Yours is a hotel in Marrakesh. It's an import business in China. It's a funding thing over here. It's a technology play over there. I mean, huge variety, Lex. It's literally like, that looks interesting. I'll have a go.
Does it come across as flighty?
No, it comes across as incredibly, I mean, on the one side, yeah, zero focus in terms of one area, if you look at it. But in the other one, it's like, wow, this is a person who's not scared of anything.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. It's never occurred to me that I wouldn't be able to do something, that I shouldn't have a swing. at fixing even the biggest problems, you know, and I've been increasingly ambitious over the years in thinking, yeah, there's a big problem with e-commerce and the way that people shop. This is, you know, a multi-billion into the trillion dollar industry. Let's try and fix that or do big things. So, yeah, I think that probably comes from being raised in a certain way and going to a good school. That certainly helped.
With a scholarship to one of the best schools in the country.
Yeah. Very grateful for that. Obviously not at the time. When you're there, you can't wait to get out. You can't wait to get out into the big bad world and make your mark. And you think, oh, I'll be in my early 20s and I'll be driving Lamborghinis off cliffs for fun. It's going to be amazing.
And of course, Lex Deeks sneaking off. And if you saw Lex Deeks, you should go and have a look. You would see that he's obviously the bloke that went off and had a cigarette.
Yeah,
behind the bike shed. That's obviously you.
Yeah, we were part of a big group of friends who are actually all still really close, which I think is really special. There's probably about 20 of us from school. And I went there at 11, who are still almost daily on a WhatsApp group talking, which I think
are you allowed to say the name of the WhatsApp group, or is it inappropriate?
Well, there's a couple. There's a cheeky rave group, because a bunch of us that like to go
party
to drum and bass raves, yeah, on about a quarterly basis.
Yeah.
And then the Potters is the kind of bigger group. I'll leave that one open to interpretation.
Stay with me for much more from one of the members of the Potters. His name is Lex Deek. He's my business shape today. He's back in a couple of minutes. Right now, let's hear a taster from the Michigan Academy digital sessions. They can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Michigan Dere's Suman Kaur and Jeff Dragon talk about how startups can best prepare for success.
The Michigan Academy digital sessions. Conversations on the legal topics affecting businesses and individuals today.
I think the first tip is it's very good in the first stages to think carefully about how those initial shareholdings of the company will be allocated. There's a temptation, especially in the early stages, just to say, okay, we'll just split everything equally. And that may not always be the best case. It may not be appropriate. What we see and what founders kind of see more often than not is that actually how you envisage the company going at the very early stages and how you envisage the allocation of work between founders never normally stays like that. You know, things will happen. Some founders may not be able to put as much time in as they mm-hmm. assumed they would. Life decisions, life changes in the founders' personal lives may mean that they have to step away from the business. And it can create kind of an imbalance of work allocation. So it's really important, I think, initially to think carefully about how you're going to allocate work and how that allocates the shareholdings, because it's much easier to change that in the initial stages of a company before any substantive work's been done, before any contracts have been won, and before any kind of investment has come in. Because as soon as the company has value, if we want to change the shareholdings in any way, then we have to be very careful of the tax liabilities there.
The Michigan Academy Digital Sessions. To access advice for businesses that is regularly updated, please visit michigan.com. Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again with Lex if you pop Jazz Shapers into your favorite podcast platform, and I won't judge you if it's not mine. My guest today is serial entrepreneur Lex Deek, formerly Dayak. I'm going to keep saying it. This is for your mum. Founder of, amongst others, Q Ventures, a venture capital firm, and most recently co-founder and CEO of Basket, the e-commerce startup, aiming to revolutionize, big word, the online shopping experience. This thing, I'm intrigued by all these different entities that you've created and that you've envisaged. And as you said, I really like the phrase about, you know, just let's have a swing at that. Mm. Why not? I can do it. Very, very different worlds. And I imagine growing up, your world that you grew up in was quite a different world to this relatively well-to-do school with a different group of people in there. Do you think you've been searching for your people all your life? And is that why you kind of go, I wonder if it's in the family office investment space. I wonder if it's in a hotel over here. Is there this sense that you haven't quite found that yet?
Wowza. I think so. I think so. And I'm quite happy to not find it. I think it's okay to just be on. It's not a search that is coloured by a need to find the answer. It's more of an endless exploration. I don't know if any of us ever really find, you know, our total comfort zone, and I think that's fine.
But some people, you know, most people are sort of satisfied stroke not satisfied with what happens to them, yeah. Whereas you've actively gone, I'm going to now look at this, I'm now going to look at that. Most people haven't got the energy or the imagination or the confidence, Lex, to do that. And you have had.
It's interesting. I think, yeah, I just like being part of lots of different tribes. You know, I think that's why I'm still really good friends. So from primary school and the boys that I would hang around with up to kind of mid-teens and we'd cause trouble in the local area. And it was a very different, you know, what we would do for fun would be very different to what friends from my school would do for fun. But we're still really good pals. We'll still go, again, once a quarter, we go out for a curry and a few beers and catch up with this four or five of us that will do that. Very different school, the same, really close. Mm. University was culturally different again. There you're getting kind of more exposure to other parts of the country. Mm. And really good bunch of friends from there as well. I'm always fairly comfortable in my own company and in fact need that from time to time just to find your center again. And, you know, dalliances with very wealthy people. I've met my fair share of billionaires through the family office network and very privileged people. Typically, I find those who have had lots of privilege and taken it for granted to be, you know, less inspiring, less interesting people. It's always, I think if there's been an element of struggle or adversity, it tends to shape more interesting people.
And of all the things, and your, you know, whether you call your childhood, it doesn't sound like a struggle. It sounds like a lot of fun, but it was definitely bouncy. There was a lot of movement.
Yeah.
Of all the things you've created, which one excites you and interests you the most?
Oh, basket, without a doubt. I've wanted to build basket for a decade or more.
And why?
It's a big play. If we can nail this, this is a decacorn play, ultimately. This could be huge. It's so multifaceted. It's kept my attention. So in previous ventures, you may run something for a couple of years and then you sort of, out the corner of your eye, there's something glinting. You know, there's a new space over here. It's an AI thing. I've got to look into that. Oh, wow. This could revolutionize it. And suddenly you've lost a bit of the passion for what you were doing. But basket's so multifaceted. I just get more and more, I fall more and more in love with it, actually, every week that goes by.
Things haven't always gone right for you in the business world, and that's normal. And obviously, if we were in the States, we'd be celebrating the failures as much as the successes. Integrity strikes me as important to you. What is it like to be let down? What does it feel like when you've got someone who, and this has happened in the past year, where someone has said they would do something or they would invest and they haven't? How have you dealt with that personally? How do you move on from that?
Yeah, so I've always been really, I've really valued the importance of candor and the value of time, right? We all do. And I think if I feel like anybody is just not being honest or transparent with me, and essentially it's tantamount to wasting your time, that's really bad. It's kind of unforgivable. And a no is fine, right? A no is fine as long as it's a quick no. Then we can all get on with our life. It's a bit like a relationship. You know, do you let a relationship that you know isn't right continue? Is it fair to either of you? No. What should you do? Call it a day, you know, at an early stage, of course. So, yeah, there's been a few times when, and it happens a lot with investment, right? People make promises. You know, you look them in the eye and they say, yeah, no, definitely. I'm just super excited. I'm going to be there for this. I'm all in. And then it comes to the crunch and lo and behold, they're nowhere to be seen. And, you know, there's a lot of moving parts when you're raising money. There's, there's other parties when you're book building. You've got to spin a lot of plates and juggle other people and keep that momentum going. And then if somebody kind of pulls out after they've made you, you know, a commitment.
But you can move on. You move on.
I'll just let it go.
You accept that that's going to happen.
The older I've got, and the more experience that I have under my belt, you know, the less I let that weigh me down. Mm. You know, you just accept it and you move on quickly. There's no point in ruing over it. It's just a part of it. But yeah, you can tell those kinds of people, I think. You get to develop quite a keen eye for those people.
And is the same true? I mean, look, again, you strike me as a very independent kind of person. You can't do all these different things if you didn't have a core belief and a sense that also you can make it happen. Have there been people along the way that have been phenomenally supportive and helpful, people that are standout in your life? Or has it been a journey where lots of different people at lots of different times happen to have given you some kind of help?
I think there's been, you know, probably half a dozen people that have been really helpful. My mum, of course, we've spoken about that. That was.
But you still is your mum still involved with you in that way?
I mean, emotionally supportive, but she has been financially supportive in the past, and
but advice as well. I mean, Lex, in
yeah,
that sense,
yeah, advice. I mean, I've because I think, and I'm only starting to realise this in recent years, because I lost my father. Inevitably, you're always seeking a father figure, and I have placed faith in false idols over the years. You think somebody is great. It's like, you know, never meeting you. You should never meet your heroes, yeah. Right? You read about this person, you think they're great, they've got loads of money, they back people that they think are going to build the future. They've achieved so much. It's going to be so inspiring. You meet them, you're like, okay. never mind. And so I've invested, I don't do it anymore, but I used to invest quite a lot of time in building that hope that this person was going to be really inspiring. I've just taken lots of little snippets from everywhere, right? There's, you know, some friends have been super supportive, have given lots of advice, been there for me. The journey is, you know, it's really up and down at times. The roller coaster, emotionally, you can wake up some mornings and think, you know, this is it. I'm on a path to really cracking this. And others, when you're like, what am I doing? I've literally don't think I should be doing this. I'm fooling myself at times. And then people that have really helped me out. That my wife is incredible, super supportive. I mean, she's been with me through much of this. We've been together since our mid-20s, really. And yeah, she's been incredibly supportive throughout and understands the journey deeply. So she's been incredible. And otherwise, it's just bits and bobs. It might be something that you read. It might be a film that you watch. I mean, I chew through biographies like they're going out of fashion. And like we were just talking about before, it's the early bits that are really interesting. It's the genesis of, and you pick up little bits from all over the place. Events that you might go to, you know, talks that you listen to, podcasts, radio interviews.
Jazz Shapers.
Jazz Shapers. It's with a that great voice, source.
As I've got a family who say that I have a radio voice. I don't think it's true. They do. It's like, it's me. I'm sounding exactly the same in the kitchen as I do here, talking to Lex Deep, my business shaper, and our final chat will be coming up very shortly. We've also got some music from Jacob Collier. That's all in just a moment here on Jazz FM. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
Lex Deek is my business shaper, just for a few more minutes. You mentioned that Basket has your attention.
Yes.
That you have not had your head turned. What does the future look like? What's going to be going on in the world of Basket over the next iteration of it?
So we are building, we were building it before it was kind of cool to be building an AI agent. But now, of course, this is a hot buzzword in the AI space. And the vision for Basket is to be this shopping companion for everybody. First of all, it lets you bookmark what you're thinking of buying from anywhere, whether it's a holiday, a handbag, a television, a teapot. It's the place you store stuff. So no more screenshots, notes apps, all that kind of stuff. It stays in Basket. But then everything that's involved in the purchase journey, researching the best price, finding the best retailer, looking for coupon voucher codes, is there a cashback opportunity? All that heavy lifting, sharing it with friends, potentially great for gift lists and things like that. All of that kind of stuff will be happening behind the scenes for you. So Basket will become the one true AI shopping agent, not just in the UK, but US launch is imminent, and we want to take over there and become just really useful to people, like help people to manage their relationship with consumerism. This is not about buying more. It's about buying better, feeling in control, like cutting out the noise. And I think that's really worthwhile. And there's so many things we can do with it. Lots of conversations we're having with top retailers. We're getting approached on a regular basis by investors, which is great. It's nice to be in that position.
Makes a change.
Yeah, I'm working with the best people I've ever worked with, really amazing team that I would die on a hill for. And, you know, there's just so much we could do with it.
Without sounding like this is the movie which culminates in the end scene and everyone's holding the trophy, it does feel like a lot of the things you've done have led to this moment.
Yeah, for sure. There's a thread that's gone through, and it's around aggregation, it's around a big play, it's about building something that's useful to people. It's kind of building a layer almost, and that's, I mean, over the years, I've done things like, I bought weddinglist.com as a domain randomly from Martha Stewart.
Really?
Would you believe? Yeah. That's after we got married, thought, wedding gifting could be done a bit better, so bought this domain. Never had the time to do anything with that. And then before Basket, my wife and I, Lee, launched a platform called Kinderlist, which was a kids' gifting platform, so parents could create wish lists for their children and avoid, you know, there's a lot of waste and duplicate purchases and faff in that kids' gifting space. So we built that. That was the genesis of Basket. So, yeah, the thread is quite strong. In fact, it actually goes back to when I was on Dragon's Den and pitching Family Fridge. The most popular part of Family Fridge, which was like Facebook for your family group, was the gift list. And it was very crude in those days, but you just paste in a link for something that you wanted and share that with friends and family. And the conversion rates on those links, the purchase conversion rates, were astronomical, about 20 times the industry average.
I can suddenly see you, not that this is you, with all these little post-it notes, and you've kind of traced it back like some kind of private investor.
Yeah,
hold on, there's that bit, that's that. And you go, hold on a sec, 2008, that's what that idea is for. I got that.
The amount of times I've been close to buying red string and getting a corkboard and just being like, slightly I need to visualise it.
It's a beautiful mind come to life. It's kind of Russell Crowe gone a bit nuts.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
This has been great to talk to you, Lex. Great to piece together all the different elements of this jigsaw. No, absolute pleasure. Just before I let you disappear, to go make some more trouble and good things, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
La Vie en Rose by Edith Piaf is, for a couple of reasons. One, it's just a story about falling in love. And I used to play it quite a lot, or hear it quite a lot when I was growing up. She also... And I think this is a lovely part of the story. She didn't think it was a good track, and most of her contemporaries in music didn't think it was going to be a flyer either. So they canned it for about a year, and it kind of seeped out a year later and then became, I think, her best-known song. And also in WALL-E, the animated film, if you've seen that, there's just this little scene where WALL-E is looking at the VHS playing, and it's this song, La Vie en Rose, in a dance sequence. I'm not sure of the film, but I just think that's just the most beautiful kind of juxtaposition of the future and how humanity's been lost, and that always gives me goosebumps.
La Vie en Rose from Edith Piaf, the song choice of my business shaper today, Lex Deek, a serial entrepreneur who said, I like being a part of lots of different tribes. And boy, has he done a lot of different things with those tribes. I value the importance of candor, he said, because he doesn't want people to waste his precious time as he goes on and builds the next thing. And finally, and I absolutely love this, it never occurred to me that I wouldn't be able to do something. That sense that actually it's worth having a go, that sense of confidence. And as he said in his own words, let's have a swing. Great stuff. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.